Good morning. I'm recovering from a cold, a man cold. So I don't have my normal, you know, silky smooth, winning voice. I have this kind of croaky thing. So I hope it won't be too distracting for you all. We'll see how we go. So we are continuing looking at the life of Elijah. I spoke last week from 1 Kings 18, and we're moving on to 1 Kings 19. Thank you. Thank you very much. And I'm going to start, as I did last week, by pulling up this verse from James 5:17. Elijah was a human being, even as we are. He prayed earnestly that it would not rain, and it did not rain on the land for 3.5 years. You remember what happened in the previous chapter. We talked about it last week. It had been a drought for about 3.5 years. And Ahab had been critical against Elijah. The people didn't really care. They were kind of waiting to see what would happen. Even Obadiah, one of God's own men in the court of Ahab, was a bit skeptical and indifferent. Elijah was totally alone. He was outnumbered 850-1 by the false prophets, but he kept his nerve. And while they did their thing, and in the end he prayed a simple prayer to God, and God acted. Fire came from heaven and didn't just light the altar, kind of incinerated everything that was there. And Elijah said, you know, it's going to rain. And he prayed and he sent his servant. He had to do it 7 times. But eventually rain came. And Elijah believed that because God had said to him, it's going to rain, it was going to happen. He was a man of real faith and trust in God. And when you read stories, hear stories like that, it seems almost superhuman, the kind of things that happened to Elijah and the things he did. But James tells us here in this passage, no, it's not superhuman, it's human. Elijah believed what God had said. That's it. That's all he did. That's what happened. There wasn't anything superhuman about it. And that's what James's point is. Elijah was human, just like us. And yet his prayers were powerful. His prayers were effective. God used him, and it wasn't that Elijah was special, or that he was a prophet, or that he was a different, that meant he had access to this power of God, because he was human, just like us. That's what James is saying. Now let's go on to 1 Kings 19. What happened next? Could we go, please, Beth, to the verses? Now, Ahab told Jezebel everything Elijah had done and how he'd killed all the prophets with the sword. So Jezebel sent a message to Elijah to say, may the gods deal with me, be it ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like that of one of them. Elijah was afraid and ran for his life. When he came to Beersheba in Judah, he left his servant there, while he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness. He came to a broom bush, sat down under it, and prayed that he might die. I have had enough, Lord, he said. Take my life. I am no better than my ancestors. Then he lay down under the bush and fell asleep. All at once an angel touched him and said, get up and eat. He looked around, and there by his head was some bread baked over hot coals and a jar of water. He ate and drank and then lay down again. The angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him and said, get up and eat, for the journey is too much for you. So he got up and ate and drank. Strengthened by that food, he traveled 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God. Then he went into a cave and spent the night. Okay, thank you. We'll go back to the slide. So those are the first 9 verses. We heard how Elijah sort of was involved in this amazing thing that God did. And then we read these verses and it kind of puts another spin on those words of James, doesn't it? Elijah was human, just like us. You see, last week we were talking from the perspective how each and every one of us has the potential to be used by God. Each and every one of us has the potential for our prayers to make a difference and for God to speak and act through us. Even though we are human, that is not an obstacle to God using us. But today's passage, we read how Elijah was human just like us, in that he was weak, frail, he was vulnerable. He was not immune to the confusion and doubt that comes from trying to follow God in a world that frankly wants you dead. Even seeing God at work, even being on the winning side, is sometimes not enough. You end up still sitting down and saying, why do I bother? Why do I bother? There are two sides to being human. Being human is not something that stops God from using us. But being human also means that sometimes when God uses us, it is difficult. It is painful. It hurts. That first lesson, the lesson that, you know, God can use us, God can work through our prayers, God can do mighty things through us, that can take a long time to learn. That can take many years to come to the point where you accept that God can do things through you. But I bet you that second lesson, that being human makes it hard at times to follow God, means we are vulnerable, we are frail at times. That is a lesson we learn fairly easy or early on in our walk, I would imagine. I guess we learn that it doesn't take much for us to realize that it's hard work being a Christian. In fact, the first time I preached on this passage, 1 Kings 19, I found out when I was sort of doing some reading for this sermon and going back over notes and things, I found out that I preached on this passage a long time ago. I'd been a Christian for just over a year, really, about 14 months. I'd been preaching for about 8 months, and my third ever sermon was on this passage, 1 Kings 19. And I think I chose this passage to preach on. I think I was given a free rein, 5 sides of handwritten notes, because that's how I did things in the old days. I've got it down now to 3 sides of computer notes, but it's still the same. And even then, even all those years ago, I used this passage to talk about how being a follower of God is not easy. It's not easy. It's hard. Even then, you know, being a young Christian, I'd already figured that out. That it's hard work to follow God. Sometimes you get kicked. Sometimes you get knocked to the ground. And although that particular sermon is kind of over 20 years old, that message, it is hard work to follow Christ, is a lot older. It's not a new thing. If you go back 2,000 years, Jesus himself stresses this point. He says, whoever does not take up his own cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. It was Jesus who said, before you start this journey of following me, make sure you count the cost. Make sure you can go the distance. Don't start it if you can't finish it. It's hard work. And even older than Jesus, going back into the Old Testament, you find countless stories like this one of men and women who followed God and it brought them into conflict and tension with the world. And it wasn't easy. It wasn't an easy choice. It's not an easy victory. And I see it here in this passage. Elijah has just done something amazing. He's just exercised amazing faith. He's seen God do incredible things right in front of his eyes because he prayed. And the people have returned to God. They've pledged allegiance to God. He is God's man in the situation. And Jezebel the queen, says, so what? You may be God's man, but you're also a dead man. And Elijah is terrified. This man who stood up to the 850 prophets of Baal and Asherah, who mocked them as they caused all this scene, Jezebel says, I'm going to kill you. And he is terrified and he runs. We heard Ahab goes back. He tells Jezebel everything that happened. You can imagine that conversation, everything that happened. Ahab says to Jezebel, have you looked out the window? It's raining. The drought's over. I was just up on the mountain and Elijah was there and he built this altar and the people poured water all over it and the prophets of Baal and Asherah did their thing and nothing happened. And then Elijah prays and fire comes down from heaven and the people have turned back to God and they've sort of, Elijah's killed all the prophets of Baal and Asherah. And then he prayed and it started raining again. It's 3.5 years of drought and it's raining again and the people have turned back to God. And Jezebel says, hang on, what was that you said about the prophets being killed? Some people are like that, aren't they? They hear what they want to hear. There are people for whom God can never do enough. There'll always be a reason not to believe. I'm sure you know people. No matter what you say, they still hear what they want to hear. And maybe that's what did Elijah in. The fact that after all this, and he's thinking, surely now Ahab and Jezebel will see the error of their ways. They'll turn back to God. Surely now. And Jezebel turns around and says, I'm going to kill you. And maybe that's what breaks Elijah. He thinks, if that didn't work, nothing's going to work. If even now they won't turn back to God, what can I do? It's all been for nothing. I can identify with that feeling. Let's go back to the passage. 1 Kings 19, the second part of 9. Second part of 9 isn't up there. It says, then the word of the Lord came to Elijah and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? And it goes on. He replied, I have been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, torn down your altars and put your prophets to death with the sword. I am the only one left. And now they are trying to kill me too. The Lord said, go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountain apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. When Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. Then a voice said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? He replied, I have been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, torn down your altars and put your prophets to death with the sword. I am the only one left and now they are trying to kill me too. The Lord said to him, go back the way you came and go to the desert of Damascus. When you get there, anoint Hazael king over Aram. Also, anoint Jehu, Nimshi, king over Israel. And anoint Elisha, son of Shaphat, from Abel-Meholah, to succeed you as prophet. Jehu will put to death any who escape the sword of Hazael, and Elisha will put to death any who escape the sword of Jehu. Yet I reserve 7,000 in Israel, all whose knees have not bowed down to Baal, and whose mouths have not kissed him. Okay, we'll go back to the slides there. So, you have this scene where Elijah sort of sits down under a bush and says, I wish I was dead, and goes to sleep. And he's woken up a couple of times by an angel and given food because the angel says, the journey's too much for you. Like, go to Horeb, the mountain of God. You are going to meet God there. But you can't get there yourself. So God himself kind of provides the energy that Elijah needs to meet God. So I thought, that's a really nice image, isn't it? Those moments when we're too weak to even get into God's presence. God himself sustains us and draws us and provides the energy we need to get into his presence and meet with him. Isn't that nice? I thought, that's wonderful. And what does Elijah do the moment he gets into God's presence? Bang! He has a good old moan. Good old complaint. The first thing he says is, God, I've got a bone to pick with you. I like this passage. I have to say, I like this passage. I've had moments like that, not uncommon throughout my life. And I do have a soft spot from these prophets who every now and then say, you know what, God, this isn't working for me. I've done everything you've asked and it's brought me nothing but trouble. I like this passage. And Elijah's so convinced of these things, he says the same thing twice. Twice he says to God, he brings these complaints to God. But here's the thing. Here's the thing about the list of things Elijah says, the list of things Elijah complains about. None of them are true. That's the thing. None of them are true. He starts off, I have been very zealous for you, God. It's almost like this kind of subtle having a go. God, I've done my part. I've been zealous for you. I've worked hard. I've done everything you've asked of me. But where were you? Where are you? And I think, Elijah, were you not in my sermon last week? Do you not remember what happened? You prayed. Fire came from heaven. Of course God was there. And then he goes on, the Israelites have rejected your covenant and torn down your altars. Elijah, last week, you were there. What were the people shouting? The Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. They'd actually come back to God. Elijah says, I'm the only one. I'm the only prophet left. And they're trying to kill me too. But last week, you spoke to Obadiah and he rescued 100 prophets, didn't he? He kept them alive. How can you say you're the only one? What's happened here is it's just a series of lies that Elijah has told himself. A series of things that aren't actually true, that he's absorbed, that he's believed, and they've kind of plummeted him into depression, into these low spirits. And that happens so easily. It happens so easily. We think that often the battle, the conflict, the fighting we have to do for God is all out there in the conversations we have and the ways we interact with the world. But there are battles that go on in here too. There are battles that go on in here because, as Paul says in the letter to the Ephesians, our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. And it is entirely possible, as Elijah did, to win the battle that's going on out there and lose the battle that's happening in here. It is entirely possible. And I have lost count of the number of times this has happened to me. The number of times I have sort of, you know, preaching in particular, where you prepare a sermon and all through it, and you've got this sense that God is at work, and you stand up and you preach and you think, okay, yeah, God is in this. Something's happening here. And the moment you sit down, you think, oh, I missed that bit, or I shouldn't have said that bit. Oh no, it was terrible. I've told you before of the time I preached a sermon once that was so bad that I came away and thought, I'm never doing that again. What was I thinking? I shouldn't be preaching. And I didn't. And I didn't preach for a long time. And then a year later, someone comes and says to me, oh, you know that so-and-so has become a Christian because of something you said in that sermon. It happens so easily. It is, in fact, I would say, typical. If you do something for God, expect a backlash of some kind. If you stand up for God, expect some resistance. That's how it works. That's actually normal. Don't be discouraged. Don't be surprised. This is what happened to Elijah. He's right there with you in this. God has just used him for something incredible, and he comes away saying, I wish I hadn't bothered. I wish I was dead. Because whenever you do something for God, whether it's sort of something obvious, a regular ministry, or even if it's just things like loving the people around you, even if it's just simple acts of grace and mercy to others, whenever you do anything for God, there is always a voice that accompanies you with that. A voice that says, you're not really making a difference. Not really worth it. You're just wasting your time. And I have discovered over the years that the louder that voice is, the voice that's telling you not to bother, the louder that voice is, the more difference you are making. That is how it works. I once heard a quote from someone who David Pawson, who said something like, if in your journey you never bump into the devil, maybe it's because you're heading in the same direction as him. I think being a follower of Jesus means it is not uncommon to have these Elijah moments where you say, everything is happening and God is working, but still you come away saying, oh, it's not working. Why am I bothering with this? I shouldn't be doing that. And Elijah hears this voice that says it's all useless, it's all pointless. But Elijah hears a second voice. He hears God's voice bringing the truth. I spoke probably a couple of months ago when we were going through some spiritual disciplines. I spoke on solitude and silence. And I used some of these verses from 1 Kings 19 to talk about how God speaks in the soft voice, and we need to learn to still ourselves and be quiet and calm that inner chaos. Otherwise we will miss the voice of God. But looking through this passage, it made me think of something else. I wonder if God didn't speak in the wind or the fire or the earthquake, because I wonder if Elijah is just so broken and bruised that he just couldn't take it at that time. He just couldn't handle meeting God in those kind of places, in those kind of ways. You know, we've had really bad wind recently. It's an incredibly angry weather, wouldn't you say? I haven't enjoyed it at all. And the idea of God coming sort of to you as a rushing wind doesn't sound a particularly pleasant experience. And that's the thing, is sometimes we don't need the God of the wind or the fire or the earthquake. Sometimes we need the God who just comes, sits down next to us, places a gentle hand on our shoulder and whispers soft words of encouragement. Sometimes that's the God we need. And I think about what Isaiah said about the suffering servant in his book. A bruised reed he will not break. A smoldering wick he will not snuff out. And there are times in our life where we feel like we're at breaking point. And I guarantee you this, that if we are, it is never God who will break you. When we are on the edge, it is never God who pushes us over the edge. And maybe sometimes you think, I can't speak to God. I can't pour out my heart to God like Elijah did. Because what if God just turns around and says, oh, get over it. Pull yourself together. There are people out there with much bigger problems than you. And we think, I just couldn't take that. I just couldn't hear that right now. Well, I tell you this, if you can't hear it, if you don't have the strength to hear it, then God will not say it. Because look at how God deals with Elijah here, a man who, God's not done anything wrong. Elijah has allowed himself to be sucked in by the things that are not true, by the lies, and yet God ever so gently speaks to him, ever so gently sustains him, ever so gently draws him back to himself. God doesn't say to Elijah, you know, oh, you've had a rough couple of weeks, take some time off. You know, there's still work to be done. He's still got things to do, but look at how gently God sort of basically says, look, this is what you're going to do. Spells it out, black and white, gives him a list of simple instructions to follow. And by the way, he says at the end, you are not alone. I've reserved 7,000 who have not knelt before Baal, because that is another incredibly powerful lie. You're on your own. You're alone. Particularly in a place like this, especially in a place like this. You're on your own. No one understands. You better keep your struggles and problems quiet, because they're quite embarrassing, aren't they? Look around you, all these people standing, singing, smiling. They wouldn't understand. They're all fine. They're all getting on okay. None of them have got the same kind of struggles as you. That is not true. Elijah has these kind of struggles, and Elijah, as James reminds us, is human, just like us. These struggles are just a part of being human. And look around you at all the other humans in this place. I am a great believer in having someone to share your struggles with, someone to talk to, someone you can be honest with, because I know that sharing your struggles, sharing your fears, sharing your doubts breaks some of the power those things have over us. Because some of the power these things have over us comes from thinking, I am the only one. I am the only one struggling with this. I am the only one having these doubts. I am the only one going through this at this moment. And God says, if only you knew, it's you and 7,000 others. So let's finish off the passage. Let's go back to the last few verses here. So after all this, so Elijah went from there and found Elisha, son of Shaphat. He was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen, and he himself was driving the 12th pair. Elijah went up to him and threw his cloak around him. Elijah left the oxen and ran after Elijah. Let me kiss my father and mother goodbye, he said, and then I will come with you. Go back, Elijah replied. What have I done to you? So Elisha left him and went back. He took his yoke of oxen and slaughtered them. He burned the plowing equipment to cook the meat and gave it to the people, and they ate. Then he set out to follow Elijah and become his servant. So this is how it ends. It's kind of almost like none of that previous stuff ever happened. Things are back to normal. Elijah is back in the game. He's going there doing what God's asking him to do. But having complained about sort of the loneliness of the long distance prophet and the isolation and the way he's been feeling, God gives him a companion. Here's Elisha, Elijah. You're quite similar. There's only one letter different in your name. And maybe, again, this is another of the ways of thinking we get ourselves into. When we bring our problems to God, we kind of expect God just to use smooth words over the problems. Maybe give us a Bible verse. Maybe bring someone along to tell us something. And that makes us feel better. But did it ever occur to you that maybe God actually does things because you ask him to do them? Because Elijah comes and says, I'm the only one. And God says, no, you're not. Let me give you another one. So whenever you feel this way again, you just look to your left, look to your right, and there's Elisha. You are not alone. We are human, just like Elijah. We can rely on God to be there in his power and his might to do things through us. Being human does not disqualify us from being used by God in incredible ways. We can rely on him to hear our prayers, even though we are just human. But we are human, just like Elijah, and we can rely on God to be there when we are frail and broken and vulnerable and struggling. We can rely on God to speak to us as we need to hear it, to lead us to meet our needs. So it doesn't matter this morning where you're at, whether you feel like, yeah, I am ready to pray powerful prayers, I am ready to follow God and do amazing things for him, or if you are sitting there thinking, I just don't know how much longer I can go on, I'm really struggling right now. It doesn't matter, because God is in the middle of wherever you are. Let's pray. Father, I thank you, and I'm sorry that it's taken me so long to learn the lesson that you actually do things through us and through our prayers, and that just like Elijah, we can be used by you in incredible ways. But Lord, I thank you that very quickly on in my journey, when I've been struggling, I've known that you are there. You're alongside us in our difficulties and our struggles, that you are gentle when we need you to be gentle, that you do provide for us, and you will not let us be tempted beyond what we can bear. So Father, I pray this morning, and I thank you for each of us who are currently confident, Lord, that you can use us, who have seen you at work in our lives and are praising you for the things you've done, Lord. I thank you for that, and I pray you may continue to work through those people. And I pray for those of us, Lord, who are struggling, who are wondering how we're going to keep going, who, like Elijah, are maybe feeling like everything we've done has been for nothing, and that we're coming to you and saying, God, I wish I was dead. Father, I pray for those of us in that place, and I pray that each of them will bring their heart's cry to you, and that you may hear and answer and lead us gently back into the fray. Amen.